Since I've been so grim this evening, I feel I have to share with you a story that I feel obliged to tell today because I have to leave, sadly, this evening to go to honor Kofi Annan, who's being said farewell to at dinner tonight. And one of his favorite stories about development is worth sharing with you and perhaps putting you in a slightly lighter mood. It's a story he loves to tell about the hen and the pig discussing the problems of development. And the hen says to the pig, you know, all these terrible problems of poverty and suffering in the world, we can solve them. And the pig says, how can we? We're just a hen and a pig. How can we solve these problems? Hen says, very simple. We take them one by one and we solve them. Pig says, okay, tell me more. Then says, well, take hunger, for example. Between you and me, we can solve hunger. Pig says, how come? Hen says, look, I produce the eggs and you produce the bacon. Between us, we can get hunger licked. Pig thinks for a minute and says, so you produce the eggs and I produce the bacon, huh? So yours is a contribution, mine is total commitment. But I tell the story because we're very fortunate to have both hens and pigs with us this evening. I think most of us here are hens. We will make our contributions as best we can. But for pigs, and I'm sure that's the unkindest thing that's ever been said about either of them, we have two extraordinary and remarkable individuals who have already made a real difference through their ideas and their work in tackling poverty around the world. Our panelists have both found ways to contribute to this noble imperative of ending poverty. In 1995, successful businessman Abraham George founded the George Foundation, a non-profit organization based in Bangalore that is dedicated to the welfare of economically and socially disadvantaged people. His foundation undertakes projects aimed at poverty alleviation, education, health, and the empowerment of women. Like all the best development projects, the impact of the foundation's work often extends far beyond the project itself. For example, Abraham's foundation conducted some 25,000 blood tests for lead contamination on children and pregnant women in 1998 and 1999. Its findings led directly to the establishment of new legal and regulatory regimes to prevent lead poisoning in India and indeed in several other countries. Abraham is also the Dean of the Indian Institute of Journalism and New Media in Bangalore, and he sits on the board of many important scientific and lobbying bodies, both in India and in the US. And somehow in his spare time, he is the full-time chairman of eMedX Online, a busy medical diagnostic software company in New Jersey. But I think what he's proudest of is the school he runs, Shanti Bhavan, giving world-class education to the poorest children, slum children, children from the poorest villages and homes. Tom Friedman has written about him and about Shanti Bhavan in his book, The World is Flat, and if anyone is flattening the world for poor kids, it's Abraham George.
Thank you, Asia Society, and Shashi Tharoor is not here, but it's wonderful to be introduced by someone who doesn't need any introduction anywhere in the world. What I'd like to do in the next 10 minutes or so is to sort of give you my view of where we stand with poverty and who can solve it, and what I have found from my 11 years working in Tamil Nadu, in the villages, what I have learned by way of my work, what are the solutions to poverty. Mahatma Gandhi said some 60 years ago that poverty is the worst form of violence. And he asked his countrymen to solve the problem of poverty in India within 50 years. Now we are 60, 70 years after. Where are we? In my opinion, yes, there has been improvements. Extreme poverty may not be there in big way, but there are more people in poverty today than when Gandhi said those words. Government of India says that only 35% of the people are poor. Well, the take is that the government defines poverty in terms of how much food you eat, the calories that you take in. And according to that, according to the government's definition, or ICMR, Indian Council of Medical Research, you need only 30 cents to be above poverty, 30 cents a day. So by that definition, only 35% of the people are poor. Well, I just didn't see that to be the case in the 17 villages where we work. So we decided to go out and survey the people and find out what is their income level. And most of the families have, on the average, 4.5 members in the family. So you have to have at least 6,000 rupees a month of income if you are, you know, above poverty of $1 a day. And we couldn't find more than some 30% of the people whose income was above $1 a day. And for $2, the broader definition of poverty, we could hardly find 10% of the people. Well, we work in Tamil Nadu, and it's one of the more prosperous states in India. Maybe there are other states like Kerala and Punjab and so on where poverty levels might be much lower. But my take is that from the little experience that I have in Tamil Nadu, a good number of people, more than half the people are below $1 a day, and maybe even as high as 70 or 75% of the people are below $2 a day. So that's where the problem starts. You know, we don't count the people, how many people are really poor. And that's true of literacy too. We did a survey of how many people are literate, and we found that hardly 30% of the people could write their name or write their age, their age in on a piece of paper, and hardly 30% could do that. So literacy rates are also, from my experience, extremely low. Now, the world, of course, as Shyama pointed out, half the world's population is below poverty of $2 a day. Now, who can solve this problem? Well, all these years, we relied on governments to solve the problem. And we thought that maybe with foreign aid and international assistance from the UN and the World Bank, and you put it all together, and some more governments will solve the problem. And we have found that that has not worked. Well, sure, there has been improvements in many countries, but still half the world's population is poor. Now, can't government solve the problem? Well, I don't think so. From my personal experience working in the villages, government has been a hindrance to solving the problem. I think of a government as like a zebra, you know. You try to scrub. People say you can improve the government. You try to scrub the stripes off. It's not going to become a racehorse. So my personal belief is that, yes, government has a role to play, but I do not think that it can really make a difference in motivating people who work in the government establishment and so on to really do things correctly, good governance, good planning, good execution, delivering services effectively. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, if you turn to NGOs, sure, NGOs do an excellent work. They are good, you know, advocates for various causes. They undertake targeted programs like HIV/AIDS or improving schools and so on. But they are also, me included, not really They don't have the resources or management skills or the organization to deal with such a massive problem of 3 billion people. And we are adding 100 million people more each year. In India alone, we are adding 20 million people more into the ranks of poverty. So I do not think that NGOs are going to solve this problem. They can make a difference. They can reduce the suffering. They can help other programs. So who is left? Well, interestingly enough, I come to the conclusion that it is the private sector that's going to finally solve the problem. You know, India, for example, and China, we have seen in the last 15 years in India, the urban society has improved a lot, incomes have gone up, a lot, hundreds of millions of people have got jobs, and their income levels are higher than ever before. It has happened not because of some government programs or some kind of a Marshall Plan that India implemented. It is actually because of more of less government. India decided to let the private sector do its own thing, more of less government. And if the same thing happens in the private sector in a gradual way, and we allow the private sector to move in and probably make money, not probably, they are going to try to make money, there is a good chance that they will create the kind of jobs, the number of jobs we need. In India alone, you need some 500 to 600 million jobs, new jobs, to be created in the rural sector in order for the poverty to disappear. So then the question then is, will the private sector conduct itself properly? We are all worried whether the private sector will exploit the poor, you know, not paying the wages, not giving the benefits, and so on. And I think it is possible. I think it is possible to create the kind of incentives and disincentives to eliminate the excesses and do the right thing. And that's a different issue through, you know, enforcement of minimum wages, providing of protection against any kind of problems that might occur from worker safety and issues of environment. So if we can deal with those issues, we can have the private sector move in with the right set of incentives like tax breaks and low interest loans and so on, so that they would create employment. We are not looking for the private sector to move into the villages where people are living less than 50 cents a day, trying to tap the market of bottom of the pyramid. We are not talking about selling to the people. We are talking about creating employment, the factories where they can work, have new skills, and so on. So if we can make that possible, I think the 3 billion or 2 to 3 billion jobs that are needed, new jobs that are needed throughout the world to eliminate poverty will come mainly from the private sector. Now, where do we all fit in? The very fact that you are here tells me that you are really concerned about this issue. And many of you, or almost all of you, have been immensely successful in this country, doing the kind of things you do. And I think we have the power to make a difference. We have the power to impact poverty in a big way. We cannot wait for the government to solve the problem. We can start our own NGOs, or we can help an existing NGO that is doing a good job, or we can make private investments in the rural area on a number of different things. For example, in the villages where we work, you could have different types of crops, and you saw in the video, we grow bananas, 250 acres of bananas. Every day we ship 15 to 20 tons of bananas. We are the second largest grower of banana, and all that banana profits when we have is put back into ways of empowering poor women, getting them land, employing them, running hospitals, and so on. But it doesn't have to be that way. It can be for profit. But if you would move in with industries or agriculture-based, like processing, we are thinking of going into winemaking. It'll be the first time where an NGO is into liquor business. So, but these are opportunities, making tiles, leather, pulp, paper, the whole alternate medicine, ginseng, all these things can be grown, and alternate fuels from various types of crops. So all these are possibilities, and I would urge you to consider embarking on, you know, for-profit enterprises, employing people, and there is money to be made in doing so. In the process, you will help millions of people. So with that message, I'll end my introductory remarks, and Jacqueline, your turn.